Perek Bet. We're going to do it all in one shot, because Perek Bet, and we're going to spend half the time talking about the general problem of Perek Bet in Yonah. Perek Bet meaning from the third pasuk till the tenth pasuk, those eight pasukim. And then we'll look at the text itself and see what it means and how we should understand it. But Perek Bet, the second chapter of Yonah, is very difficult because the bulk of it, the eight pasukim in the middle, from pasuk Gimel through Yod, are a psalm of thanksgiving. And this is Yonah's tefillah. So let's take a look at the first two pasukim, which kind of lead into it. Yonah, as you recall, has been thrown into the water. And as the story flows, and there's, by the way, something that we miss in this, Vayiman Adonai Dag Gadol, God appoints. Now that word Vayiman, which does not show up much in Tanakh, except very, very late in Tanakh. In Daniel, it shows up. It's really only in really late Tanakh literature that the word shows up as a point in that sense. But here it shows up, God appoints a fish. By the way, God later appoints a tree, and God appoints a worm, and God appoints a wind, and always with the same word, Vayiman. So it's like a word that's somewhat unique to say for Yonah, but it shows up quite a bit in the Sefer. And he appoints a big fish. Livloa et Yonah. Now, what's the purpose of this fish? So one thing that we always miss in the story of Yonah, we don't think about, is from the boat to the fish. Because somehow, I don't know if we picture it this way, that he gets thrown over and then he goes right into the fish, then maybe he didn't even get wet, but it would seem, from the way that the text is presented, that he's actually at sea, thrashing about, and then a fish comes and swallows him up. Now we have to keep in mind, what was it that Yonah wanted in the first parak? It was fairly clear what he wanted. He wanted to die, but he didn't want to do it himself, so he is through his inaction and his advice, or his request, they threw him overboard. So he's in the water, and then a fish comes and swallows him up, which means on the one hand, the fish is saving him. On the other hand, from a much more dastardly perspective, the fish is actually keeping him from what he wants. He's being kept alive, sort of artificially, in this fish, where he wants to really die. Right, he's in the dag, the fish, for 3 days and three nights. Now notice the phrase, 3 days and three nights. If you tell me he's in there 3 days, I don't need to know that he's in there three nights. Because usually, he's not going to leave the fish for vacation every evening. It's fairly obvious. Why does it say, shlosha yamim u'shlosha lelot? Where else are we familiar with that phrase? 3 days and three nights.
Three or just days?
Well, do days and nights if you want, but I'll take you to three. Where are you familiar with that, where you're told X amount of days and X amount of nights?
Moshe.
Moshe Rabbeinu was Bahar Sinai, Arba'im Yom. Yeah, does it say Leilot? I don't think so. It's Arba'im Yom.
Creation.
Arba'im Moshe, Bahar, Arba'im Yom, Arba'im Laila. Correct.
Yes.
Okay, good. Where else?
Creation.
Well, creation is day and night, but you don't have the tvach of saying
flood.
It was 6 days and 6 days. What?
Flood.
Arbaim Yom Vambaim Laila. Very good. And the flood is a critical piece. Now I want to take you to three, because the flood and Moshe, of course, fit together, 40. Where do you find 3 days and nights?
Esther.
Esther, exactly. And Esther says, what's she going to do for 3 days and nights? What's she going to do? She's going to fast. 3 days and nights, the way that it's described, seems to be like a period of, which is a very short period in life, but a very long period of affliction. She's going to afflict herself for 3 days. Now, this is interesting because of something that takes place later on. We did not yet hear what it was that Yonah was supposed to say in Nineveh. We're only going to find that out in Perek Gimel when he gets a second chance, and he goes and he gives the cry. What's the cry? Od arba'im yom v'ninveh nepachet. In 40 days, Nineveh is going to be destroyed. When we study Perek Gimel, we're going to take a look at the fact that in our text it says arba'im yom, but critically in the Septuagint it says 3 days. And it colors the story very differently. From the perspective of 40 days, there's a very clear tie-in to the Mabul, to the flood. And it may even be parshanut on the Mabul. You find this happening in Tanakh often, when there is an early story, which we'll call the foundational story, and then there's a later story, which we'll call the derivative story. Right? You have the story of Yosef, you have the story of Mordechai and Esther. Mordechai and Esther is derived, as it were, foundational story being Yosef, which is the Jew in the foreign court. But what happens sometimes is that some event in the Mordechai and Esther story will shed light on the Yosef story. In other words, the authors will use the opportunity to work backwards. In the same way, how do we understand in Pshat the 40 days of the flood story? The 40 days of flood story is the 40 days of punishment, right? 40 days of rain, and then there's another 150 days while the water recedes, right? While the water goes up and then finally starts receding. But it's 40 days and 40 nights of actual flooding. What are humanity's options during this entire story of the flood? You're right, none. There are no options. And at no point in the story of the flood is there a notion of opportunity to do tshuva, to change anything, etc. Now, notice what happens in our story. Yonah comes to Nineveh and says, in 40 days, Nineveh will be destroyed, and that gives the people an opportunity to do tshuva, and as a result, avert the decree. Which then may be parshanut back to the flood and saying there's more going on in the flood than you thought. Maybe during those 40 days of rain, the people had the opportunity to do tshuva, and God would have stopped the rain, and they didn't, and they were destroyed, maybe. And the thing that doesn't clinch it, but brings it a lot closer is, what was the crime for which the flood happened?
Hamas.
And what's the crime that's described in Nineveh? Hamas. So the tie-in there is quite clear of the major event, the macro event and the micro event, as it were. Right?
The 40 days tells you that it happened before. He didn't have to finish the sentence. They know what's going to happen, but now...
Could be, if they're familiar with the story and familiar with the opportunities. The big problem in the Kriyat Nineveh, which we're going to get to in Perek Gimel, is that the Yonah's declaration is not a declaration of tshuva, unless there's more there that we weren't told about. But the reason that's interesting is because, again, in the Septuagint, it's not 40 days, but it's rather 3 days. And 3 days, of course, is a very short period. On the other hand, 3 days is a time period that we're familiar with as a time of intense tshuva experience, the whole Esther story, the fasting, etc., which is mirrored here. Which then becomes very interesting because Yonah is in the fish for 3 days. And therefore his 3 days become sort of a foreshadowing to what's going to happen in Nineveh if we play it that way. Now, we're going to leave it for Perek Gimel, but I just want to point that out about the 3 days. Vayitpalel Yonah el Adonai Elohav mima'ei hadagah. Now, we typically read it as follows, that Yonah is in the fish for 3 days, and at the end of 3 days, Yonah prays. That's the way we typically read it. He says 3 days, and then he prays, and then we assume after his prayer, that's when he gets out, which means his prayer is his release point. That might not be the case. It could be that Yonah is in the fish, and during the time that he's in the fish, he says this prayer several times, and he's done his time, and something else is going on in his head that has God spit him out. You had God have the fish spit him out. We don't know. There's a lot missing here. But when we take a look at the tefillah itself, we will see that tefillah is very, very problematic. It's problematic because of what it says, but far more problematic because of what it does not say. What did we want Yonah to do when he was on the boat and the storm started? What? But what did we want Yonah to do? Yonah wanted them to throw him overboard. What did we want Yonah to do? We want Yonah to turn to God and say, I'm sorry, I'll go to Nineveh. Do tshuva. Leave these people alone and I'll do the right thing. Instead, Yonah clearly the whole time wants to die. And he is really presented in opposition to the sailors, who not only are the religious ones, where he is the one running away from God, but they have a great desire for life and he wants the opposite. And even when they kill him, when they throw him overboard, they say, please don't hold it against us and let us live. So their whole thing is about wanting life. In the meantime, his whole thing is he wants death. He goes into the water and we do not know what he experiences, although we may get a glimpse from this psalm, but we know that he's taken by the fish and he's in the fish for 3 days in which he's in a limbo because he can't live properly. He's in a fish, but he can't die either. And for some reason, miraculously, he's got enough nutrition, enough whatever it is, to be able to stay alive, is there for 3 days. It's like this thing in stasis. So take a look at what it actually says in the psalm. We're going to read through the psalm, and I said call it a psalm because it really is a mizmor, like a mizmor of Tehillim. It's as if there was a parak of Tehillim that got lifted. That, you know, Yonah wrote, it got him put in Tehillim, and then now we'll put it in Yonah. I think it's actually something different than that. Vayomer, what does he say? Karati mitzara li el Adonai vayaneni. I called out to God from troubles, and he answered me. Now, by the way, he's saying this in the fish. Mi beten sha'ol shivati shamata koli. I cried out from the belly of the depths, and you heard my voice. Now listen to that phrase. Karati mitzara li, if you take a look at the back page, you'll see in Tehillim Kuf Chaf, the very beginning of the Shir HaMaalot series, is Shir HaMaalot al Adonai, but Tzarata li karati v'aneni. It's almost exactly the same phrase. But of course, that is being sung by somebody who was in trouble and now is in the Beit HaMikdash and is singing thanksgiving to God for saving him. In the meantime, Yonah is in the fish. So is he saying, thank you for saving me from the depths by having the fish take care of me, and I'm in the fish, and that's great? We could hold that thought for a little minute, but it's not going to last. It's very strange what he's saying here. And now, v'atashlicheni mitzula milvav yamim. You threw me into the depths. You threw me, which means he is now interpreting the events on the boat in a religious fashion. Not that the sailors threw him over, but that God threw him over. By the way, that is mirroring what the sailors did, because what is the sailors' reaction to the storm? God did it. And now whose fault is it? It's all a divine thing. It's not some weird weather pattern. He's taking it a step further. You, God, threw me over into the depths, as it were. The Nahar Yisoveveni. Now, the word Nahar is a little misleading, because we think of a Nahar as a river. There's no river in the sea. But a Nahar can also refer to sort of a fast current. So that means he's in the water and this fast current is kind of going around him. Kol mishparecha v'galecha alai avaru. Mishparei Yam, we're familiar with that from Tehillim Tzadi Gimel. The big waves and the small waves. They're all around me, which means, what is he describing? He's describing himself at sea, drowning, waves crashing around him, fast current around him, and he's going to be sucked up by the depths. Beten Sha'ol. And you saved me from that. It reminds us, of course, of, and I have it on the back, Tehillim Lamed. Harim chadunai ki viditani v'o simach to'e v'ayli. Ma betza medami etach el shachat. Well, what's going to be the point of me going to the depths? You lifted me up. And so here, v'ani amarti. Now, what does amarti mean? So remember that the verb amar in Tanakh always takes an object, an audience. And if there is no audience, it means thought or decided. Vani amarti means this is what I thought was going to happen. Nigrashti mineged einecha. I've been pushed away from you, which is a very strange thing for Yonah to say, considering he's running away from God. Ach osif lahabit al heichal kodshecha. Now the acher means but instead, indeed, I am going to again see your Beit HaMikdash. Now by the way, Mikdash mandach hashmei. How did the Beit HaMikdash get into here? That's not part of the Yonah story at all. Yonah is a man in Zvulun. He goes to Yafo. He goes to Tashish. He goes to Nineveh. I'm giving away the end of the story. Right? And that's... But there's no Yerushalayim in the Yonah story. And there's no Mikdash in the Yonah story. What does he mean? Now notice that in these first three psukim, and this is, I believe, the proper structure of the psalm. You have 3-2-3. The first three psukim is describing the troubles and the salvation. But notice how many words are about me. It's about me. I was in trouble. Now that makes sense because he was saved. He then talks in a much more intense way about the threat of death, which is very strange for Yonah considering that's what he wanted. Afafuni mayim. You're familiar with that phrase? Afuni chavle mavet. Afuni mayim. They've come surrounded me. Ad nefesh. Now the word nefesh is an interesting word. What does the word nefesh mean? So in rabbinic Hebrew it means soul. Its meaning shifts a little bit over time. But in Tanakh, what does nefesh mean? So nefesh normally means person. Nefesh ki techta. But the word nefesh in Tanakh in several places actually means mouth or throat. And a great example of that is the phrase that I certainly knew growing up, higiu mayim ad nafesh. It's pasuk in Tehillim. Higiu mayim ad nafesh literally means the waters have come up all the way to the throat. In other words, I'm about to drown. Right? And we have it in Hashem Ori V'Yishi. Al tineni benefesh tsarai. Because my enemies want to eat me. They want to devour me. So don't let me go into their mouth. Afunimam an nefesh, the waters have now crowned me up to the mouth. Tahomi Salveni, I'm surrounded by the chasm. Suf chavush l'roshi. Now this is strange because he's describing a river with fast current, and suf, of course, is reeds, which are in a swamp. So it seems to be a borrowed word, which is referring to sort of like all the detritus, all the vegetation that grows in the sea is like around me. You see sometimes in certain beaches where I saw the other day in Santa Barbara, we're at a beach, and we saw a kid went in, and the wave went back, and the kid had bonds of seaweed around him. It was all locked up in them, Kilo. I mean, it was cute, you know, it wasn't dangerous, but you know, kind of tied up in all the vegetation. And now we get into a, sort of an ancient image in Tanakh. We're going to have to comment on the whole Mizmor, but first just see the Psukim. And that is the image, which is not necessarily inaccurate geologically, which is that the mountains are, the foundations of the mountains are at the bottom of the sea. Well, there certainly are in the sea topographical shifts that take place, but poetically, we think about the edge of the mountain being at the bottom of the sea. So the kitzvei harim yaradati, I went down to the edge of the mountain, as it were. Ha'aretz b'richeha v'adi le'olam, sort of the bolts of the earth were in front of me. Vatal mishachat chayai Adonai Elohai, and you pulled me up from the depths. So again, his description here is several things at one time. One is kind of thrashing about in the water, saying that he's going down, and then he actually went all the way down, and God pulled him up. So some of this clearly isn't real. I mean, you can't actually be at the bottom of the sea without proper apparatus, and then afterwards say thank you for pulling me out. You're not going to have much to say. And then he seems to move into a mode in the song of reflection about what it's all about. B'hita'atef alai nafshi. Now, b'hita'atef is two very different words. One is the one we're familiar with from tzitzit, and one of them is to faint. B'hita'atef alai nafshi. I was like faint. At Adonai zacharti. Then I remembered God, or it might mean hizkarti. I mentioned God. And my tefillah got all the way to the mikdash. So he's imagining God in the mikdash, listening to his tefillot. And then he turns around and makes some sort of comment about pagans, which is so out of place in the mizmor. Mishamrim havlei shav. Those people who guard for the nonsense. Those people who kind of wait for the nonsense. Chazdam yaazovu. They will ultimately abandon their chesed. What does that phrase mean? It sounds like what he's saying is people who have this other set of beliefs that aren't the true beliefs do kindness, but then they walk away. They're not. There's no loyalty. There's no real commitment there. But what does that have to do with here? Va'ani, and here the va'ani is clearly the vav hanigud, which is the vav of negation, meaning I, on the other hand, but I, b'kol todas b'chalach, I will give a korban to you with thanksgiving, which sounds like these other guys are either not, or they don't mean it, or it's not going to last. Asher nadarti ashalema, that which I committed to, I will fulfill. Yeshuata l'Adonai, out of the God's, the salvation belongs to God. That's his song. Now, the song is problematic independently, and it's far more problematic contextually. So let's deal with the far more in a second, for a second, and then we'll go to the local issue, to the independent issue. Within the context of the story of Yonah, this psalm just doesn't belong. Because what is he saying? What is the essential expression in this psalm? Thanks, it's thanksgiving. There's no request here. It's thanksgiving for being saved from the depths. Which is a little strange to say in the fish. Unless you consider the fish to be the salvation. It's a little strange. Plus, he actually says, you've saved me beten sha'ol. It's So he seems to use the stomach as the place where he was trapped and saved from, not where he's safe now. The larger problem is not what it says, but what it doesn't say. What should he be saying here? What do we want him to? What did we want him to say in Parak Aleph and refuse to? At this point, after 3 days of reflection, what should he be saying?
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Give me another chance. I'll go. And there's not one word of his sin, of the illusion that he could run away from prophecy or from his mission, of Charat. None of it is here. It's very strange.
It's not so strange, though.
Why is it not strange?
Because I don't think we have a history of being apologetic.
That's very not true.
Okay.
You start with Bereishit, and you find the brothers in the way that they talk to Yosef, and they might be doing it out of fear. You find the way that Yehuda speaks in front of Yosef when he doesn't know it's Yosef. Right? Some of the greatest language that we have in our Slichot comes from passages of the brothers in Yosef.
We certainly do have it
when Moshe comes before HaKadosh Baruch Hu several times, the Egel and the Meraglim, etc. We certainly do, and certainly through Nevi'im.
But his language is language of gratitude.
Exactly. Which is very odd, considering that A, he hasn't been saved, and B, the main thing he should be saying to God isn't gratitude. It's, first of all, he should be asking for salvation. Second of all, he has to be doing tshuva here and expressing it. And we do have lots of literature like that in Tanakh. Very strange, which is why many have suggested, and I certainly subscribe to this, that we have to look at this perek a little bit differently. And we said this, by the way, way, way back when we studied Sefer Shmuel, at the beginning of Shmuel. So I'll take you there right now, and we'll come back to this. If you recall, at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, it's actually going to be the Haftarah Monday morning, all the way through this, we have the story of Chana. Chana comes to Shiloh. Chana prays, and we don't know what the words are of her prayer. She also makes a neder that if you give me a son, I'll bring him, you know, he'll belong to you, I'll come back to you. And she goes home. Eli blesses her. She goes home after the whole thing. He thinks she's drunk, etc. She has a baby. She waits for a couple of years. She comes and makes aliyah to Shiloh, brings him and hands him over to Eli in the ceremony. And then, vatitpalel chana vatomar. And what does she say? Alatzli bi ba'adonai, rama karni ba'adonai, etc. Vachat pi alavai ki samachti b'shuatecha. And she starts talking about war and about weak people and about strong people and about hungry people and about satisfied people and all sorts of other stuff. Nothing to do with childbirth. Nothing to do with her request of God. Nothing to do with this child. And there's one line in that whole piece which has to do with childbirth, which is Ad akara yalda shiva v'rabat panim umlala. Now, the thrust of that mizmor is that the way that God's world works is that things are upside down. And don't be so trusting that whatever your status is today will be tomorrow. You could be doing very, very well today and tomorrow suddenly not, and vice versa. And one example she gives is Ad Akara Yalda Shiva, the barren woman has 7 children. V'rabat panim umlala, and the one with lots of kids is now mourning because they're all dead. Now, to ascribe this to Chana, meaning that Chana composed it as a tefillah in honor of the birth of Shmuel, is strange, and it actually makes Chana into a terrible person. It's strange because it's mainly about war and about poverty and not about childbirth. There's only one line about childbirth. Second of all, it says, till the Akara has given birth to 7. Well, what's 7? She has 1 kid. She'll end up having 6, but not 7. But right now, she's got 1. But more critically, is it turns her into somebody who's so mean that she's wishing that Pnina's kids all die. It's awful. So let me ask you, what happens when you get a text? Let's make it easy. You get a text during Uvalat Zion. Now, I'm saying it for a reason. You get a text during Uvalat Zion. That you suddenly find out that somebody has taken a turn for worse and they're going into emergency surgery. So what do you do? I'll tell you why I picked Yuval Etzion. What do? You go up to the gabbai or the shliach tzibur and you say, do you have to end up davening? Can you please say what? Perek of Tillim. What Perek of Tillim do? Yeah, Shor Malach, right? And not the most appropriate, but okay, we say Shor Malach. And you might even make an announcement if it's people, somebody that people know, our friend Chaim Yanko is in the hospital, just took an emergency surgery, let's all say Tillim for Chaim Ben Racha, right? And we say Perek of Tillim. Do we compose a prayer on the spot for Chaim and his angina? And his heart problems and his whatever? No. We take, what do? We take a pre-existent thing, which people know, which is fairly easy, which we're all familiar with the words, not too long, and we say it. The reason I picked the Ovel Tzion is because what's the ideal thing to do? The ideal thing to do is to let everybody know beforehand, and they should say it in Refayinu. But, so I picked this. It's after Shemona Esrei, so okay, so say a Perek Tillim. Right. Best do both. What did Chana do? Chana's not necessarily a composer. Chana comes to the Mikdash in Shiloh. She's bringing Shmuel there to hand him over to Eli. And she wants to give thanksgiving to God over the fact that she gave birth. And that her status beforehand as the more beloved wife with no children and suddenly she has a son has been turned upside down. Now she's a matron, as it were. So she picks a song that's already out there, which reflects that turnabout of events and even mentions childbirth. She took a Perek of Tillim and it got put into Sefer Shmuel. The theory is, and I think it's a very strong theory, is that's exactly what happened here. Is that whether it's Yonah who said this or the author who said it, whatever it is, took a Perek, which speaks about being in the depths and being saved from the depths, and actually has another critical piece here. Because this Perek is coming right after Perek Aleph. We're in Perek Aleph, Yonah, and by extension, Am Yisrael, look pretty bad against the backdrop of the pagan sailors who look pretty damn good. They're praying, they're ethical, they're sensitive, they're great guys. We talked about that last week especially, about how they're presented. And here we have a a mizmor, if you will, a mizmor todah, a thanksgiving psalm, that sounds like it's being said in the Beit HaMikdash by somebody who was drowning and thought, I'll never see God's Mikdash again, and now here he is in the Mikdash with a Korban, and he's giving thanks to God for that salvation. That's what it sounds like. And Yonah's familiar with this Perek. So Yonah takes this Perek and says it. Again, it doesn't say that Yonah composed it. It says Yonah said the tefillah. So again, whether it's Yonah or the Machaber, whoever it is, plugs this in because it reflects several things. First of all, the idea that he was in the depths and was saved. That's what happens afterwards. But perhaps more important, and that's why I bolded that phrase, Mishamrim Havle Shav Chasdam Yazovu, is that Yonah has to, or the author has to put a twist on the behavior of the sailors that puts it into a perspective. These people who believe in their nonsense, they are disloyal. And perhaps he's even pointing to the fact that they very quickly abandon their own gods, for you, shows their disloyalty. Chasdam Yazovu. But the point is that I'm absolutely loyal. I'm 100% loyal. I'm sticking to my guns 100% loyal. I would rather die than be disloyal. And part of the problem is, be disloyal to what? Be disloyal to my own approach to things. We'll talk about over the next few weeks. The next few shurim, I mean. So it seems that this mizmor that we have, which highlights thanksgiving for somebody who's saying, I was in the terrible depths and you saved me, is put in here because it both touches on the issue of being in the depths and being saved. There are several passages in which Yonah seems to be responding to the sailors. Again, like the sailors saw the storm as God's doing, he sees being thrown into the sea as God's doing. But also it takes the sailors' religiosity and puts it into a temporal light where they plug into things on the spot because of emergency, but they don't have long-standing commitments. I have long-standing commitments, and he summarized that with three words. And that's why I titled this series this way, Asher Nadarti Ashaleima. That which I committed to, I will pay. And if you remember, at the end of Perek Aleph, what did we hear about the sailors? Vayidru Nadarim. They took vows. And the Radak says, what was it that Yonah was looking for? He wanted to see if they'd fulfill the vows. Or if their religiosity was not foxhole religion, which is born out of a sense of danger, but doesn't carry with it necessarily anything that's longstanding. So what we're going to see in the next couple shiurim, we're going to look at Perek Gimel and see how Yonah then responds to this next opportunity that he's given, and how he then responds to the response of the people in the invasion.